A couple of weeks ago, Marisa and I got the opportunity to be the keynote speakers at a conference, national conference in San Antonio. And we found ourselves talking with 100 young adults who were college age and just hungry to hear from God and hungry to hear about the wisdom of God. And so Marisa and I got to invited to be part of this experience and part of this conference, and it would be the first time actually that her and I would talk together and really communicate together to an audience. The topic that we discussed at that point was the topic of friendship, the topic of wisdom and friendship. And if you're new this morning, we've been doing this series, started last Sunday, on wisdom, on friendship, and today is going to be no different, and next Sunday we're going to hit that as well. But I want to invite Marisa to come up here, and she does this with me this morning. I always said she was my better part, so finally she gets to prove it. She really is. I married up, and she married a couple layers down, I think. Oh. You know, one of the things that we want to share is just how we met, really. I'm sure you remember how we met. I know, yes. I do. But
we met in college at a ministry called Destino, which was a Hispanic Christian organization. And I had been looking for a Hispanic fellowship kind of place so that way I could meet some other Hispanics. And I always knew I was going to marry a pastor. I just, whenever I came to Christ, I knew I was going to marry a pastor. And I knew that he would probably be Hispanic. And so I was like, well, where can I meet a Hispanic pastor? And so I talked to my friends that were in Campus Crusade for Christ, and they were like, hey, I know this great guy. He's a Hispanic guy. He's the coolest Hispanic guy I know, and you're the coolest Hispanic girl I know, so you should meet him.
Now, pause it for just a second. I was probably the only Hispanic guy he knew. So it's natural for him to say that I was the coolest. You know, when you're one that you know, you tend to be, you know, you can be the coolest.
So anyways, I went to this watermelon social that they were having. And so the first time I met Jesse, the first time I saw him, he had two watermelons on his, one on each shoulder. And he was wearing it was back in the 90s. And so the shorts were...
Yeah, the shorts hadn't yet been extended, you know. It's the 90s, so, you know, it's like short shorts, and his back when it was appropriate.
And he had a muscle shirt on with all his bulging muscles.
Ripping muscles everywhere.
And he had a Jesus beard. I'm not kidding. It was like Kyle's, pretty much.
I had a lot of it going on.
Yeah, and so... Even God knew that we were going to be together, because I hate facial hair, and the muscles were great though.
I know. I've been able to keep them too. So,
but whenever I talked to him within the first 5 minutes, I was like, "This is the man I'm going to marry. He is the most gorgeous guy I've ever met in my entire life."
Now, if you're a guy, and if you're like not a facial hair kind of guy, and you finally let it grow, like with me, it's like patches. That's what it is. Not even a full beard. But I was doing ministry, so I was hoping, like, I mean, if this is isn't it a deterrent? You know, I mean, I don't know what is. So that was my goal, to be a deterrent. I had just gone back from ministry, done a mission trip to Spain, Granada, Spain. I had been there for 6 weeks, and so I get back.
And I always wanted to go to Spain and do missions there.
So we connected at that point, and we started talking. Like, she knew that we were meant for each other. I'm a guy, so it took a couple of weeks longer.
And I tell you this, I was always at all the meetings that we had, and I would be the last one to leave. Because, see, there aren't that many Hispanic Christian guys in college. And so all the girls were there for this guy. I'm not kidding. They would all be flocking around him. And, hi, Jesse.
I thought they were just trying to be spiritual. Like, all these girls want to be spiritual. Like, they want to know Jesus, you know?
Even when we were dating, they were like, can you come? But don't bring Marisa, because she doesn't speak Spanish. And so he would say, well, if Marisa can't go, then I won't go. But
we struck a good friendship, you know. And before I said I do to her, and she said, I think I do with him, there was a friendship that had already been developed. And we had friendship before we had marriage. And, you know, that's one of the things we want to talk to you this morning. Because one of the most important things that we can communicate to you, that we can talk to you about, is friendship. Because if you get the area of friendship right, it'll set you up for success in almost every single area of your life. But if you pick not so good friends or don't have friends at all, then you set yourself for failure in so many different areas of your life. So both of us, as a result, have this huge burden for friendship and what friendship means. And as a matter of fact, King Solomon put it best in Proverbs chapter 12, verse 26. He put it this way. He says, the righteous choose their friends carefully. The righteous choose their friends carefully. So we understand, both of us do, that this area is really, really important. You know, you may not choose who your friends are, but you can choose whether or not you deepen that friendship. And so I'm going to show you an illustration.
So this is a funnel, and I always wear red when I use this funnel. That way it matches me. So these friends at the top of your funnel are going to be your acquaintances. Maybe you went to high school with them, and so you see them at the grocery store, and you're like, hey, what's up? And that's about it, okay? Then as you go deep in the funnel, then these friends are like the people that you work with, that you talk every day to, but you don't really, you know, share life with them, but you talk with them every day. And then maybe you go here, and there are people that you do work with, and sometimes you go to happy hour with them after work or something, or Bible study, a real life group.
wink.
And so as the funnel goes down, these are going to be your closest friends in the bottom of the funnel. Those are going to be the ones that you do life with, that you tell them your problems, that you tell them your struggles, you tell them the praises that are in your life. And so I want you to take a minute and write down three people on your little bulletin thing. Three people that are in your deepest, closest funnel, okay?
So take that moment either to write it down or to think through who are your, you know, top two, three, maybe even five closest friends that you consider friends, because these people are pouring something in you. They're pouring something into your life. So you identify who are your closest friends in the end of that funnel. So just take a moment to do that. Or think about them, because the reality is as you thought of your first, and by the way, it can't be your family. Don't put those in, and it can't be your imaginary friends. I know some of you just got really disappointed, and I was like, oh, come on. You took all them away. So no imaginary friends and no family. Who is in your closest inner circle of friendships? Because the truth is that whoever's in that inner circle, they influence you. They influence you. Bless you. Whoever sneezed. They influence you. You become who you run with. Now, in the course of our marriage, we've been married for 14 years. And like we said, we had friendship before we had married, but before we were married. But we've realized in life there are two basic principles operating in life. Two basic foundational principles on friendships. And the first one is this. Show me your friends, and I will show you your future. We talked about that last week, actually. Show me your friends, and I can show you your future. In Proverbs 13:20 is the passage that we used last week. It says, walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm. So again, it goes back to the idea that any success that I can accredit to myself or accredit in my life has been largely influenced by the kind of friends I've had in my life. And the biggest failures we've had in our life that can be accredited to either the absence of friendships or the presence of bad friendships. And that's why as you write those names, as you think of those three names, think about it this way. What future are they leading you to? What future are they holding your hand and taking you towards? Because they influence you, whether you choose to admit it or not. They influence your finances or the way you see money. They influence the way you see relationships. They influence the way you see life in general. So how do they influence? The second principle we've learned, foundational principle of friendship, is this, and that is, it's impossible to live the right life when you have the wrong friends. It is impossible to live the right life when you have the wrong friends. I want to take you to 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33. Chapter 15, verse 33. And Paul put it this way. He said, do not be misled. Do not be misled. Bad company corrupts, say it with me, good character. Say it with me again, good character. It's interesting that Paul says, don't be misled, because our natural propensity, our natural inclination is to be misled about our friends and the type of influence they have on us. Yet Paul says, don't be misled. Look at Jesus, for example. He had 12 disciples that were his friends, but he had his inward three. So even he understood that this principle is alive and well. So
It's kind of like there's different times in your life where you'll have people that are in your inner funnel, and then they kind of have to shoot out to the upper funnel, and maybe some need to go down in the funnel. Whenever I was in high school and the beginning of college, I became a believer when I was 19. But before that, I was a party animal. I was a party girl. I went to the clubs every Friday night. I knew everybody at the club because we were all there every Friday.
But by the way, during this same time, I was in the library studying. just the contrast here.
So my party friends were my friends. They were in my inner funnel. We went to the club. We drank together. We partied together. So whenever I became a believer, all of a sudden I had all these friends in my inner funnel that I couldn't relate to. I became a believer, and then they would call me and say, okay, we're going to go to the club. And I would tell this. I would say, okay, because I want to pray for people there. I want to, and I would go to the corner of the bar, and I would be praying over everybody. I would just be like, Lord, bless these people, Lord. May they see the light, Lord. May they come to know you the way I have, Lord. And so they were like not wanting to hang out with me anymore because I was not all like, yay, you know. I was doing that for Jesus. So, and I was like the wild one in the bunch, okay? I was like the one that was like, yay! So so I was doing the same thing for Jesus now. And so slowly they started coming out of my funnel, and slowly they started waking their way up to the funnel. And some of them just completely got out of my funnel until Facebook.
Thank you, Facebook.
So sometimes, then I started hanging around with people that I was going to Bible study with and people that I was going to church with. And so those people kind of got in my inner funnel. And I'm not saying this so that way you won't talk to your party friends. That's not what I'm saying. Because they need the light too. They need you to pour into them so that they can know Christ. But in your inner funnel, it should be those that are on this, somebody that is on your level spiritually, or somebody that's above your level spiritually.
Somebody you're growing with. You know, it's that, again, going back to the funnel, there's moments in life where you begin to realize, like we saw a little while ago, don't be misled, that there's some people in your life that will need to be headed towards in the upper end of the funnel. And so we'll talk more about that very thing next week, and how do you do that, and how do you get there, and what does it mean, and what kind of conversations must I have? But like Marisa said, We don't want you to get the impression that somehow you got to now defriend some people and say, man, girlfriend, I'm not talking with you anymore because I heard at church. That's not what we're saying, because even Jesus had friendships. As a matter of fact, some of you are here because somebody decided to be a friend to you. And maybe you're realizing, wait a minute, like there's value in continuing friendships. It's just the thing about where are you in that inner funnel. So there's three types of friendships that we all should have. Three types of friends that every one of us should have or that every person needs. And the first type of friend that you and me, that all of us need, is every person needs a friend who makes you better. Every person needs a friend that makes you better. And we talked about this several weeks ago and how that happens, but just to kind of reaffirm to you and re-bring it up, is everybody needs that friend that makes you better. It's interesting to me how King Solomon put it in Proverbs chapter 27, 17. Go there with me. Proverbs chapter 27, verse 17. It's a fascinating picture. He says, as iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. As iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. And so don't let the imagery escape you. Like, there's these two metal objects that are clashing against each other, and that's not an easy thing. That's not an easy thing, but true friendship clashes with each other. It's not just a friend that says, man, they're always pumping you up, but it's the kind of friend that makes you better, that's talking to you, that's saying, hey, listen, let's talk about this. Let's talk about your choices. Man, hey, girlfriend, your choices, this is the path that I see where you're headed. And so all of us need the type of friend that makes you better, that makes you better.
Yeah, whenever I first met Jesse and when we were starting dating, he would always ask me, have you gotten in the Word lately? And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, why are you questioning my spirituality? I was always a prayer. Like, I am what is it called? Yeah.
Intercessor.
I'm that. Really good. I pray all the time, all day, all night. I'm just always praying. But when it came to reading the Word, I didn't grow up in a church where they valued the Word. So I didn't really get why I needed to read it that much. You know, maybe if I had something going on, then I would get into it, but not really. So Jesse would constantly be saying, have you gotten in the Word? Have you gotten in the Word? And I'd be like, yes, okay, yes, whatever, yes, stop questioning me. But because he did that, then I was like, well, maybe I should get in the Word, because he's always asking me, and I want to say yes. So I started getting into the Word more and more. I even had my mom buy me a new Bible, and she gave me a cover with a smiley face or cover, and so I started doing that. And then as we were already married, and once we had kids, and especially after the third kid, and especially after the fourth kid, he encourages me with the 1 minute Bible. So it takes 1 minute. It actually takes like 3 minutes to read it every day. And that really helped me, because he was encouraging me to do that in our friendship, not just as my husband and my spiritual leader, but just as a friend, saying, hey, go to the Word.
And this wasn't kind of like a judgmental kind of deal. Yeah. It was more of an encouraging, particularly before we got married, just in a friend out of our friendship. And it's like, you know, have you gotten to the Word? Now, she did the same thing with me, in the sense of, you know, my presence with her, hers with mine, made me better too. You see, you got to realize that even early on, I was and I still am a big dreamer. I'm the kind of guy that's like, man, what would it look like if this happens, or if we do this or we do that? And so there were moments in our friendship, pre-marriage and even afterwards, that I would say, like, what would it look like if we just started this prayer and group in my job?
And then the dream crasher came down and went boom.
So that's what I would feel. I feel like Marisa was a dream basher. You know, like it was a little in a balloon going up in my dream, and she would just kind of pop it, you know. I'm like, wait a minute, because she would come to me and she would say, well, if you want to do that, don't you need to do this and this and this and all the details? You know, the details that matter, but when you're dreaming, they really don't matter. That's what she was bringing up. And over time, You know, I came to realize that the true measure of a person is not the dreams that you have, is the dreams that you accomplish. And in our life, you know, as a friend, and even beyond, when we got married, as married friendship as well, began to realize that there was a real value to her saying, "How about this? How about that?" The only thing I needed to kind of coach her with was like, wait until I dream big, and then wait a little while, and then bash it. You know, so she would wait. She got better. She would wait, and then finally she would come up. Finally, I had the good sense of saying, "Okay, give it to me. What's wrong with my dream?" You know, and then she would dish it and stuff. But that was helpful in our relationship and even in our friendship, actually. And we began to realize, wait, this is really making us better. And so, as you think of your three people that you identified, or the people that you hang out with, do they make you better? I mean, do they make you better? You know, do they make you a better student if you're in school? Do they make you a better father if they have children too? Do they make you a better mother if they're moms too? Do they make you a better spouse if they're married as well? Do they make you better in the way you do your finances and the way you think about money? Or are they the kind of friends that are like, you give what to the church? I mean, are they making you better, or are they kind of just kind of dragging you down? The second thing that you need is every person needs a friend who helps you find spiritual strength. Every person needs a friend that helps you find spiritual strength. And I want to take you to Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 10. So go there with me. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 10. I love this passage. It says, if one falls down, he's talking about friendships here. If one falls down, his friend can help him up. But pity, say that word with me, pity. Say it with me again, pity. But pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. And then it continues going on saying that, you know, three strands is better than one. And there's this idea that we all need friendships. We all need friendships that help us spiritually. Because that's really what he's talking about when he talks in that context. He's talking about spiritual friends. And every one of us needs those spiritual friends that when we have our tough times, they're the ones pointing you back to God. They're the ones pointing you back to really the solution, who is Jesus. And so we saw that just recently, didn't we?
Yeah, with the stroke. I mean, I had a lot of prayers from all of you, and I really appreciate that. But when I was in the hospital, I told Jesse I could only speak very little. I could only say Caleb, my oldest son's name. Yeah. And but I wrote on a paper, Cayenne, Stephanie. And I gave it to Jesse, and I said, call. And I knew that they had been at the hospital the previous day, and they prayed for me, and they had been there when the doctor said that I would never walk again, never talk again, wouldn't be able to function again. And they prayed for me, and then the next day I told Jesse to call them, because I knew that they believed that God was going to heal me. I knew it in their very being that they believed that God was going to perform a miracle on me. And so I called, I said, call Cayenne. And so they prayed over the phone. And then when we got home, I said, call Cayenne, bring him here. I wanted them to pray for me because I knew that they believed that I would be healed. And their friendship meant the world to me in those days. My best friend was in North Carolina, and I couldn't even call her because I couldn't talk. And so Stephanie and Cayenne really helped me through that.
You know, in those very moments when she had the stroke, and it was uncertain times, we just didn't know if she would ever talk again. We didn't know if she would ever walk again. According to the neurologist, she shouldn't be doing what she is doing now. He was convinced that she would be in bed for the rest of her life and wouldn't be able to talk for the rest of her life. As a matter of fact, when we saw the CAT scan and we saw the results of that CAT scan, we saw that, you know, almost 80% of her brain had been impacted. So those were real tough moments, even for me. And I still remember even our elder meeting. You know, you guys have an interesting thing going on right now with the elders, and that's that we're friends. You know, we respect each other. We are there for each other. And I still remember one time just when I finally got integrated back, being in that elder meeting, and just I just couldn't stop weeping. I couldn't stop. And I was telling them how difficult a time it was for myself, just as not only as a leader of a church, but also a leader of my own family. And those guys helping me spiritually during that time. And he got up, laid their hands on me, started praying on me. And they were weeping too. And as weird as that might sound to some of you, for me that was spiritual strength. And I had other friends as well during that time that just kind of came along, and Kayan was one of them, you know. And doctor said, a neurologist, I was there, and the doctor said, hey, I just want you to be realistic. The wife, as you know it, is not going to be there anymore. And then just thinking I was going to pass out, literally thinking I was going to pass out. At that moment, I didn't care who was around me. It was friends around me. I needed a hug. I'm not a crier. I mean, I don't cry for hardly anything. But that moment, you know, I don't know if you know Kyan's height. He's like my height, my build, you know, a little bit. And so it was two muscular men hugging each other. I know he's not that muscular. I know. But, you know, those moments, I just needed a hug. You know, and I had many friends in my life. I've always felt like I had friends in my life that's helped me spiritually. Had another friend I called Dr. John Thomas. And I said, John, I just want you to let you know that life as I know it is over. I don't know what's going to happen here. And John, who is a very detailed doctor, if you know him, he's a straight shooter. That's what I love about John. He doesn't give you any fluff. He tells you the way it is. He's also a friend of mine. I meet with him and Charlie every Tuesday for lunch, and we help each other spiritually. But I still remember his words. He said, coming out of him, he suggested there's still hope. Like, a doctor doesn't know everything. Like, there's still hope. And the very fact that she has her mind left, that's good news for you. And you just celebrate that. And in those very moments, I was like, those are real friends.
I also wanted to say that the elders' wives were really there for me too. And they, one of them gave me an iPad because I didn't have one to do my app for my
speech therapy.
Yeah. And so they came and they're like, here's an iPad. And I'm like, what in the world? This is amazing. And one of them came and helped me. I did some QuickBooks.
She used to do our QuickBooks at home. Finances.
And I was like, I can do it. And it was like 2 weeks after I got out of the hospital, and I totally messed it up. And she came and she took out time out of her schedule and came and fixed it for me. And she's like, you can do it. You're fine. You can do it. I know you have this. And so I people were really, really.
And all these relationships, all these friendships are driving back to one thing. And that is, anything can happen with God. Anything is possible. We still serve the God of the universe. You know, don't lose hope. And that spiritual strength that we so desperately needed at that moment, we had. Do you have those kind of friendships where they encourage you spiritually? Because you might be one friendship away from changing your destiny. You might be one friendship away from altering the course of your path and where you're headed. The person that lifts you up when you feel down. The person that is there to comfort you when you feel like so discouraged. The person that drives you back to God's word and says, but listen to what God is saying. Now, every person also needs a friend who tells you the truth. Every person needs someone, a friend, that tells you the truth. I want to take you to Proverbs 27:5. Proverbs 27:5. And it says, an open rebuke is better than hidden love. Wounds from a what? Sincere friend. Say it with me again. Sincere friend are better than many kisses from an enemy. You know, it's interesting that it's a sincere friend. Wounds from somebody who really loves you and really wants your best, has your best interest in mind. That those wounds, they're wounds. It doesn't say that it doesn't hurt. It doesn't say it's not going to be painful. It says, guess what? There's wounds that they're going to give you. Those wounds are better than the kisses or the friendship of people that always tells you, you know, falsehood or always goes along with what you're saying and doesn't tell you the truth. Doesn't tell you the truth. An open rebuke is better than hidden love. Wounds from a sincere friend are better than many kisses from an enemy. So that might look differently for many of us. That might look differently. Let me share some examples.
It might be like maybe you put a lot of selfies on Facebook and a friend says, okay, you're coming a little vain, you know, on Facebook. Maybe, you know, someone told me, you need to stop cleaning your house so much and play with your kids. And that was like, whoa, okay. And I think about that now that I have Zoe, because at the time I didn't have Zoe, and I always thought, well, whenever, if I ever have another baby, I'll play with her every day, every day. And I think about that friend's advice, and sometimes whenever I'm cleaning and wanting everything perfect, I'm like, oh yeah, they told me, don't clean, play with your kids. And
yeah, it might be for some of us that you have a close enough friendship with someone that can speak truth in your life and tell you, hey, wait a minute, the way you talk to so-and-so, man, that was harsh. Or maybe a friend who tells you, man, the way you're treating your spouse, your wife, your husband, or like ladies, like maybe a friend that tells you the way you talk to him in public, like, that's very disrespectful. And you may not realize this, but he feels this big in your presence. Or maybe it's the other way around. You know, the men, you have that friendship in your life is saying, dude, the way you treat your wife, like, that's not cool, man. Like, you're treating her like a child, not like a spouse. You, every one of us, or your friend at school that says, dude, I just want to be careful with that guy, man. Or be careful with that girlfriend or that boyfriend. You know, this is what I know about them. And you're headed in the wrong path. They speak truth in your life, and you listen to them. But again, it's that sincere friend. It's that closed circle. It's that inward funnel, because everybody pours something into your life, and every one of us needs that inner funnel, because that's really what brings out godliness. Is that relationship, is that friendship, is that pour into your life, and the byproduct of that is just more like Christ. And every one of us needs that. You know, for me, growing up, it was, I still remember it, just in junior year in college, and I'm Latino style kind of guy. I used to be very much where it's like, hey, I'll be there at 7-ish. Ish was always the emphasis, ish. Like 7-ish, 8-ish. Which usually meant like an hour later or something like that. And so one time my mentor at the time, the guy who was spiritually, you know, more spiritual than I was at the time, I set up in a meeting with him. And instead of having lunch at noon, like, I didn't even show up. And I didn't even tell him I wasn't going to show up. And so I was asleep, you know, and I didn't want to wake up. And all of a sudden, in that door, got this knock. And I was like, oh no, I think it's Aaron O'Brien at my door. And sure enough, it was him. And so he sat with me, he looked straight at me in the eyes, and then it's like, you know, Jesse, I don't care if you don't follow through with your word. I was like, whoa. And I said, but you know what? I set aside time from my schedule to meet with you. And if you could just have the decency to tell me that you're not gonna show up, so I don't waste my time with you. And that hurt. And yet this was the same guy who would develop my leadership. This is the same guy that loved me so much that he developed me as a man, as a leader in my life. With his mentorship and his coaching, we were able to start a ministry in campus. So it wasn't like he had my worst interest in mind. He had my best interest in mind. And he knew that I was lacking that in leadership. And he just laid it there, and it hurt. But I grew from it. Every person needs someone that tells you the truth. So it might be for some of you, your friends is the crack addict. And you know the path is not where you want to be. For some of you, it's that person that's been influencing you for bad. And you know in your heart that something's got to change. For some of you, you're one friendship away from a better relationship. You're one friendship away from overcoming addiction. You're one friendship away from leaving depression. You may be one friendship away from getting a better in better shape. One friendship away from being a stronger leader. One friendship away from being a stronger spiritual leader in your home. And as we mentioned friendship, we've got to realize that we have one friendship that is above all friendships. You want to share with people what that is, a relationship with God?
Yeah. I mean, your relationship with God, if you do not know Christ as your personal Lord and Savior, this is a day to do it. There's no wasting time. There's no waiting until you have a stroke or something like that. I mean, you need that friendship today. And
you know, it's interesting that the God of the universe, our Father, the Creator who created everything through the Holy Spirit, like this Creator, He built you and me for friendship. That we may have a personal friendship with the God of the universe, with the Father, through Jesus Christ. I don't know what kind of religious background you come from. I don't know, you know, where you came from, if you even came from any religious background. I didn't come from a religious home. We didn't go to church but twice a year, you know, and it wasn't even during Christmas and Easter. We just didn't go to church. We weren't churchgoers at all. And but I always saw God as a God of a distance, as the angry Father out there somewhere. That's not a clear picture of what God wants with you. God wants a friendship with you. He wants a friendship with you, but you can't have it. You can't have it unless you've placed your faith in Jesus Christ. Because you and me, we have sin in our life. And that sin keeps us away from that friendship. And maybe this morning you're here and you're thinking, I've never had friendship with God. I want friendship. All it takes, folks, is a one-time decision to let Him be your leader and your forgiver. Will you bow your heads with me this morning? If you're here this morning and you feel like that's you, you're the one who needs friendship. You're the one who feels isolated. You feel distant from God. I want to tell you, God doesn't want that for your life. The God of the universe built you for friendship. And this morning might be the very morning that you, for the first time, say, God, I want that friendship. If you're here this morning and that's you, you can relate to that. You've never invited Christ into your life. I want you to repeat something like me with me. Repeat this with me, either there where you're seated or quietly there in your heart. Say this prayer with me. If you want friendship with God and because you don't have it currently, I want you to say this with me. Lord Father, I am a sinner. And Father, I understand that sin has kept me away from you, Father. Because of that sin, I can't have friendship with you. I can't know you. I can't experience your love. But this morning, Father, I want to invite Jesus to be the forgiver of that sin and to be the leader in my life. And on the basis of that profession of faith, Father, I now know that I'm a forgiven person with clear access to a friendship with you, Father. For some of you, you're here this morning and you've invited Christ in your life many years ago, but you feel so distant with Him. Hey, listen, your salvation hasn't been lost at any point. You still have that relationship, but maybe your friendship is gone. And this morning, if you're in that place, repeat after me. Father, I confess my sins. Forgive me. and help me reconnect back with you. It's in your name, Jesus, I pray. Amen.